Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, September 11th, 2017, and the regular season is here. It happened. I saw it. The Green Bay Packers played a game on Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. They came away victorious 17-9 in a hard-fought defensive battle for most of the game, and so they are 1-0 heading into Week 2 at Atlanta. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. I'm here with Tom Silverstein late Sunday night, recording this after we just watched the game, went to the locker room, talked to the guys, and wrote our story. So, Tom, what'd you think?
Technically, it is the morning.
Yes, technically it is the morning.
Yeah. I wrote about Ty Montgomery. I sort of picked an odd angle because it stuck out at me while I was watching the game, which is that Montgomery gave them an element that I thought they've kind of lacked on offense, probably since Eddie Lacy was fit and healthy, which has been a couple years. Just a tough guy, someone who can stand up to a defense like Seattle's, someone who gives them they can keep pounding him, but he can make enough plays to make a difference in the game. And I thought he did make a difference in the game. He had more yards from scrimmage than anybody else. He had a couple of really key plays, a 20-yard catch that kept a drive alive. He had the 6-yard touchdown run, which I thought was really impressive. He ran right through Cam Chancellor on that.
Yep, right at the goal line.
He also made Earl Thomas miss on that 20-yard catch that I was talking about. And he also kind of opened up that 26-yard bootleg to Martellus Bennett because everybody was following him. Now, he's not going to be a big star this year. I don't think he's going to be 1,100-yard rusher. I don't even think he'll be a 1,000-yard rusher. But they're going to need him in games like this. You saw the Bears' defense that was really good. Minnesota's defense is going to be good. We know that. They're playing three AFC North teams with really good defense. Those are games where they're going to need his kind of toughness. So I thought it was significant what he did today.
Yeah, I was surprised he carried 19 times. You know, that's far and away his career high. I think he had, what, maybe 12 or 13 against the Bears last year in that breakout game. And I was impressed, too, not necessarily because, you know, his stats were amazing, because they weren't. You know, I mean, he had a lot of total yards, but, I mean, 2.8 a carry on 19 attempts.
He had 4.0 for all his touches.
Right. It's not anything special, but I agree with you. I thought that he wasn't afraid to run between the tackles. He wasn't bouncing things outside. And I thought that he actually, you know, he's not the best at blitz pickup, but I thought he was pretty willing to stick his nose in there at times, which that's the first big step. You know, there's guys that are not willing to do that, and he showed that he is. And I think his toughness is there. I agree with you. Do you think that, 19 carries, this was a little bit of a different type of game. They were trying to run out the clock toward the end a little too. Mm-hmm. Do you think he gets closer to 20? You know, did McCarthy learn anything about him, do you think, with this performance?
I think... So the way Seattle played, I think they felt like they could pass on him. They wanted to pass on him because they were thin in the secondary. They were without Shedd, and then they quickly were without Jeremy Lane. And so you could see that they kind of forgot, as McCarthy is wont to do, they kind of forgot about the run. And then all of a sudden he tries to get back into it. I do see Montgomery in situations being a 20 carry guy, but I also could see him next week getting like 9, you know, and because they just get in a shootout and they won't run the ball all that much.
The thing that I thought was potentially problematic for other defenses is how much they used him in a receiving role. Mm-hmm. You know, not just from the backfield. We saw they tried to run one screen and it was a decent gain, but I just thought the amount of times they lined up in empty sets with 5 wide was something to keep an eye on moving forward, because, you know, it's not as if the guy forgot how to be a receiver.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a huge asset against teams that maybe he gets matched up with a linebacker or a safety that can't move the way Earl Thomas can.
That's a good point, because I didn't bring that up in the story, but Corey Linsley brought that up, and he said, you know, it's not like when you send him out there, you get an undisciplined route runner, a guy who's not very good fundamentally,
right,
and is just a guy out there to try to draw someone out. You actually do get a matchup that can be favorable. So.
And the other thing that I liked about the way he played, too, was that, you know, he went out with that little foot problem for a while and came back. You know, there were some times earlier in his career where he had some durability issues, and he still might have durability issues.
Yeah, I as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, well, there goes my story, because this is what befalls him all the time.
But I thought it was encouraging that he came back onto the field, ran hard, didn't seem to have any issues.
Yeah.
Did you talk to him in the locker room?
I did.
What did
I
he
did.
Say about the foot? Was there anything to it?
He was very guarded and basically just said, I'm fine.
Okay.
You know, and he did come back and he looked fine, but you never know with those things. We all know that we didn't think Brian Balaga's injury was all that serious, and he didn't play. So,
did Montgomery have any comments on the workload he got tonight?
He basically, you know, I asked him, I said, is that what your contribution is, run it, pass it? You know, he said, I don't think it's really what I want. He said, it's what my game fits. You know, that's my game, is that I'll give you a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and that's what he does. So
let's stick with the backs just for a second. What did you think of the fact that Jamal Williams got 2 carries for 9 yards, Ripkowski got 0 carries? Surprised by any of that?
No, not really. I you could see that once it was pretty clear the Packers were going to have trouble protecting, that they wanted Montgomery in there. They wanted a threat to either force Seattle not to rush as hard, or I think they just felt like they needed to have Montgomery on the field.
You mentioned the offensive line struggling to protect in the passing game, and that's sort of what I wrote about, was just, you know, the debut of Kyle Murphy at right tackle. So Murphy said that Saturday James Campen told him that Balaga wasn't going to play and that he was going to get the start. He gets the nod ahead of Jason Spriggs, plays the full game, and it was pretty much what you'd expect, some up and some down. You know, he gave up 2 sacks in the first half. He had trouble passing off a stunt, which led to one of the sacks, and another one was Cliff Averill, a terrific pass rusher, just beat him around the edge with speed. Then there were some plays where he looked okay. But I think overall, the big takeaway for me is that the Packers realized that if Balaga were to ever miss significant time, that they have somebody who can at least hold up at right tackle.
Well, yeah, if it's a good game to hold, you know, to measure him again, which is Seattle. I will mention off the cuff that if they knew Saturday night that he wasn't going to play, how come they didn't rule him out? You know,
from the good injury, question.
From the injury rules.
Maybe that was decided after practice.
Oh,
you know, well
yeah,
into the
whatever.
Evening.
Yeah, I kind of, if I'm Seattle, I protest that one. Anyway, but to get to your point, yeah, I mean, he held up okay. You don't, it's not easy to go against Seattle. And one thing you could tell is Seattle knew he wasn't going to play. And they created, they had some of the, well, they're not the funkiest. Packers had seen them before. But they create one-on-one matchups with their, the way they lined up with some of the looks they gave. They were really, the Packers really had to adjust to them. So, like, they would push 3 guys over the...
Yeah, they had some overloads.
Yeah, the left side of the line, and someone was going to get a one-on-one out of that, you know, or they'd loop someone. And it was very, very creative. Gave the Packers a lot of problems. But ultimately, you know, the Packers were able to get just enough done because, you know, you should be able to block them 5-on-4, and that's what they were doing. Seattle didn't blitz all that much.
No.
But those looks do give you trouble, and I'm sure it gave Murphy some trouble.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to him about just the experience in general, and he said there were a couple things that he had to get used to. And some of this applies to Jahri Evans as well, because he's new to Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
But he said no matter how many reps you take in practice, it's totally different to have to adjust to the rapid tempo changes in the course of a game. So when Rodgers all of a sudden wants to go no huddle and try and catch somebody with 12 men on the field, mm-hmm. you got to be paying attention and you got to get up there quick.
Yeah, you better not be sucking gas either.
Exactly. You know? And it's funny you mention that, because I asked Lindsley about Murphy, and he said, first of all, he's the most improved player on the offensive line from last year to this year. Mm-hmm. And then he said, second of all, he mentioned his cardio. Mm-hmm. He said that when Murphy got to training camp last year, he was complaining about not having the ability to keep up with these drills and things. And he said, now you look at him today, and he didn't even look gassed in the huddle at all. So that's interesting too. And the part I was mentioning about Rodgers, the snap count is the other thing. You know, it's the type of deal where he uses it in practice a lot, but your mind goes to different places in a game. You're looking around, you're seeing things, and so Murphy said to get used to the staccato and all that was new for him in a game setting. You know, in general, I don't know. The offensive line looked like you can take advantage of it in certain ways. I didn't think it was a dominant performance by any means.
No, it wasn't. We sort of have to find out if this was the best they're going to face. Now, Atlanta's front four is going to be very good. I watched Chicago's front four. I watched that game against Atlanta, and they looked really good. So I think it was a good test for them, a good test coming out of the gate. They passed, but, you know, they got to have Bulaga back. I mean, that'll help them. They can get along with Murphy for a game or two or whatever, but ultimately, if they want to go where they want to go, they got to have Bulaga in there.
With the way Seattle plays, you wrote about it during the week a little, the fact that they'll draw you into confrontations, mm-hmm. they'll be feisty. What did the guys think of just the way the game played out in terms of physicality and demeanor and all that?
Well, I love, first of all, that Randall Cobb, I asked him on Thursday, you know, so you know these guys are going to be, you know, push the envelope after the whistle. So, you know, have you talked about not getting involved? Oh, yeah, we talked about it. We're not going to make any dumb penalties. And what does he do in the first, you know, almost the first play? He's got Jeremy Lane and
gets a taunting penalty.
Him. Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe that helped, though, because Jeremy Lane got thrown out of the game later for doing something to Devontae Adams. I never saw it.
They said he threw a punch.
Yeah.
But my big thing is, so the thing about a lot of these punches in football is that, first of all, most of them miss.
Yeah, right.
And then second of all, if the one with Lane happened the way that I thought it did, Adams was on his back on the ground and Lane was on top of him, almost like body to body. And so any punch he would have generated, there was no way to get force behind it. And then in the second half, Bennett throws that two-handed shove, which was way more force than anything could have generated, and he doesn't get thrown out.
He didn't get thrown out. But I guess a punch, if they see a punch, that's an ejection.
No, I get that. I don't know. I think that the Packers played it about as well as they could in terms of certainly matching the physicality within the rules of the game and being tough enough with the extracurriculars, but not shooting themselves in the foot in any regard.
Yeah, they did not do anything. They only did a couple things, stupid things. And that's good. You know, you want to limit the number of dumb things you do against them. I do think one thing that was really important, and you talked about the conditioning, was that they had Seattle on defense on the field a long time. And while it was really tiring, the players were exhausted afterwards, the offensive linemen, Seattle had to be more tired. They said, you know, they knew they weren't horribly deep, Seattle, and they pushed them to the limit. I think, what was it, 37-minute advantage in – or they had 37 minutes control? 39?
Packers had 39. Seattle had 21. And in terms of plays ran, it was 74-48 in favor of the Packers.
That's a lot.
That's a huge difference.
That's really a lot. And we've seen the Packers on the other end of that.
Right.
And I thought that that was a very – very much a key to their victory.
No question. And, you know, time of possession, I wrote this in my early game story. You know, time of possession is one of those stats that can mean a lot, and it can also mean absolutely nothing.
Right.
And today I thought it meant a lot because you look at the length of the drives that the Packers put together in the second half, you know, when they were really separating themselves a little bit on the scoreboard. They had a touchdown drive that was 4 minutes. They had a field goal drive that was 5.5 minutes. And then they ran off 6 minutes and 17 seconds to end the game.
Yeah, that was huge.
So you talk about those three drives together, that's 6 and 5 is 11 and 4 is 50. That's a full quarter just right there on those three drives. Seattle, meanwhile, in the second half, had only one drive that was over a minute and 45 seconds. It was a huge difference. And I thought that for the fact that the offense was out there that much and was able to, you know, move the chains a little bit has to be a huge boost of confidence for them in a lot of different ways. Especially, you know, McCarthy always talks about that 4 minute situation, the running out the clock type deal. To go 6 and get out of it and melt 6:17 off the clock, that's a pretty impressive statement to end the game.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought that was very much a key to the game, being able to wear them down. That's one thing the Packers have going for them, is they're a deep football team, and they need to take advantage of that.
What did you think of the Packers' defense tonight? I mean, 17-9, first of all, nobody at our publications predicted anything close to that in terms of just high scoring, low scoring. But, I mean, to not give up a touchdown?
Yeah, so my impression was first that Seattle has not solved its problems on the offensive line.
Not even close.
Because, I mean, Mike Daniels is a good player, but boy, he just dominated the inside. They could not block him. And Perry started out, and I think that opened things up for Daniels, because Perry was getting was beating Odhiambo really bad early on, and I'll have to go and look at the replay, but I'm assuming they, you know, sort of swung their help over his side, and maybe that opened it up for Daniels and Matthews a little too.
Yeah, I mean, Odhiambo was making his first career start at left tackle, just like Murphy was starting his first game. And I remember I asked Perry during the week, I said, you know, what is your approach to going against a guy that either you've never faced before or has never played that position before? Mm-hmm. And he said, essentially, you know, I'll watch film, but then I try and be really aggressive. And you saw right away that he was coming out flying off the edge, both with power and with speed rushes. And, you know, if there were any concerns about whether or not, continue the form he had last year after signing the contract, this was certainly a good step in the right direction for him. On the flip side of that, what did you think of Matthews?
I thought he got more pressure than maybe he got credit for, but he didn't finish anything.
Right.
I put in my 1 to 53 rankings, I put Perry ahead of Matthews, and I stand behind that.
I agree.
Think today showed that Perry is their he is their marquee rusher now.
Yeah.
And Matthews is more of a secondary player. Matthews can still do things that a lot of people can't, but Perry's just more powerful and more consistent, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes the rest of the year.
On the injury front, Ahmad Brooks picks up a concussion. Now, we've seen concussions last a couple days. We've seen James Starks be out a couple months. So if this is significant, what does that do to their outside linebacker position?
Well, I'll say I saw him in the locker room, and he was chatting it up with the guys.
I saw the same thing.
He didn't look like some guys I've seen who are pretty much in a daze.
Right.
So we'll see. It could have been one of those ones where they just weren't going to let him back out on the field. I'll tell you what, one play I saw, and this is the respect that Ahmad Brooks gets, is it was either the play that Daniels created the fumble. No, it couldn't have been, because Fackrell was the one who recovered it. But anyway, there was a play where Daniels either hit Wilson or sacked him or whatever, but they double-teamed Brooks right away. They put a back on Brooks and helped Afidi. To me, that showed a lot of respect for a guy who's 33 years old. But we didn't see much from him other than that. He didn't play that much. We'll have to see how that pans out.
We did get a chance to see a little bit of their sort of marquee or premier third down pass rush group, which is Matthews, Perry, Brooks, and Mike Daniels. if Mike Daniels can generate consistent, you know, pressure up the middle, mm-hmm. that's going to make that third down package really tough to deal with, because you can't help to the outside as much if Daniels is bowling people over up the middle. Do you think that unit has some potential?
Well, yeah. The other thing we didn't see was any blitzing.
True.
They didn't need to blitz. And Capers just kept everybody back. And so, you know, this defense is predicated on blitzing. It's a zone blitz system. So for them to get the pressure with just their front four was really good. Now, again, the caveat is it was against Seattle's offensive line, and they'll face a much better Atlanta line next week. So I want to reserve judgment for how dominant they are until I see them go against Atlanta.
We spent so much time during camp talking about this Nitro package, and they played it so much today. What did you sort of think in terms of your first real impressions of how this system could work for the team this season?
I thought it had its ups and downs. I thought that there were times when Seattle could have run the ball a little bit better, and that you probably can run the ball on that group. Now, it is, you know, they played it on first downs, first and second downs a lot. And I'm still not really sure how they're going to be able to do that against really good running teams.
Like Dallas?
Yeah, like Dallas, like Atlanta. Let's not sell them short. Even Chicago today ran the ball pretty well. So, yeah, I don't know. It seemed fine. I thought I saw Kentrell Bryce make a really nice play. Came up to the line of scrimmage, held contain, and got after Wilson. I think he knocked him down.
He was off the left edge, yep.
I also saw Quentin Rollins lose contain a couple times on runs where, you know, I don't know why he feels he has to peek inside all the time sometimes guys get too eager and it's just like, just stand where you are and the guy will either come to you or he'll go to someone else.
Yeah,
don't
true.
Force the action. And he did that a couple times. So all in all, I thought that coverage or that scheme did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, I asked Dean Lowry about it, and he said that they sort of viewed it as a test, this game. You know, I mean, we talked about in the past that one year where Capers tried the quad package, and it mm-hmm. lasted, what, a quarter in the first game? And so this was something that they put in similar man hours to. But then they were able to stop the run in the nickel Nitro package, and that's what Dean Lowry said was the big test. If they could stop the run with that group, then they can afford to play it on first and second downs. Mm-hmm. If they can't, then they either have to bring in an inside linebacker or go base or whatever they want to do to stop teams that run the ball. And he thought that it was a good step in the right direction in terms of showing that this is something that is worth pursuing throughout the season, because, you know, they did pretty well against it today. The one thing, did you see any dime today? I mean, I know Seattle doesn't spread it that much, but did you see any dime?
I did, yeah. No, you can confuse that with Nitro.
Right.
Because I figure that almost any time Joe Thomas is on the field that's
it's
their dime.
Dime, yeah.
So I did see it where Burnett kind of lined up, but I don't recall seeing Burnett in the slot anywhere.
And that's what I was just going to ask you. Who was the fourth corner then?
So it would have been
King?
Burnett.
Oh, okay.
No, it was Burnett, but he wasn't lined up.
I think it was mostly
because Seattle wasn't in a four receiver set.
Right. So Bryce was on the field with Clinton Dix.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
And Burnett, Rollins,
Randall,
and House.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What did you think of the rotation of the corners? Is it essentially what you expected in terms of playing time?
Yeah, and I would like to see King play more. I was surprised they didn't play Randall some in the slot.
I was too, actually. I thought he made it sound like they were going to alternate over the course of the game, and they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't at all. And I really think by the end of the year, that's going to be their best combo is going to be House, Randall in the slot,
and
King outside.
And Rollins is the odd man out.
Rollins will be like the dime, or he'll be involved there. I was also surprised we didn't see Josh Jones at all. Not at all. You know, now it was a really close game, and maybe they just felt like, you know, they don't want to take Burnett off the field and they don't want to mess around. So, but at some point they got to get him on the field.
And do you think that that nitro package will be the first place they try him?
Yes. I think that's the only place they'll really try him for right now, unless there's an injury.
Right. It's, you know, the bringing along of rookies is something that, you know, is sort of, I mean, it's kind of hard to figure out with Capers, because last year they played Kenny Clark a bunch, even early, you know, not a ton, but they worked him in to the point where after four or five games he was getting consistent snaps. I think Guyon got injured against Minnesota too, so that,
yes,
that helped him.
Yes, it did.
But, you know, just generally, what has been the rate that Capers brings along these rookies? Do guys, by the midway point of the season, are they at their role that they're going to be at by the end?
No. I think they tend to start playing more towards the end of the year than they do in the beginning of the year. And we saw that with Clark last year. He's sort of, you know, they start him out, they play him a lot in preseason. And that's really good for them. But then they kind of hit a wall and, you know, they sort of are taken off the field and they don't play that many snaps. And then as the season goes on and there's injuries and they start to get their feet under them, they play more. King, I think, is way ahead just because he's,
yeah,
he seems like he's a really smart player and he's picked everything up. You know, he still has a lot to prove, but he seems to me like he's way ahead of Josh Jones, even though Josh Jones has been here all off season and King didn't or wasn't. So, but Josh Jones, he'll get on the field at some point. Right now, he's got to be dominant on special teams. And he was against the Rams, but I didn't see as much today.
No, and, you know, the fact that Josh Hawkins was inactive tells you that they want Jones to have,
yes,
an even bigger role on special teams.
I think
because
he was the gunner, right?
Yeah, all during camp, it was Hawkins and Janice.
Mm-hmm.
And then if Hawkins is down, you pointed out against the Rams that Jones got on top of his guy almost every time or every time,
yeah,
with his speed and his size. And so if they're going to take away Hawkins, who had actually been a pretty good special teamer for them,
mm-hmm,
in camp, you know, that tells you a little bit about what they think of Jones. You know, moving forward, what do you think are the roles of Hawkins and Gunter? Do you think Witt will play matchups at all with any of these guys, or is this what it is? One guy will be down, one guy will be special teams.
Yeah, I think this is what it is. I think he's not going to play them till he has to, till he really feels like he has to. The talent level, the talent difference between Randall, Rollins, House, and the other two guys who were Pipkins and Hawkins is just too great. Gunter, too. Now, Gunter he played on special teams, right?
Yeah, he played a lot on special teams.
I didn't really watch him at all, and he didn't play at all on defense, right?
Not that I saw.
Yeah, so I don't know. I sort of feel like they'll try to get comfort level with the guys they have, but, you know, someone's going to get hurt at some point, and they'll, one of those two guys will play.
Anything else from the game that we didn't cover yet?
There was, and now I'm trying to remember. Oh, Vogel.
Yeah.
Justin Vogel had a pretty nice game. I didn't measure his hang times.
No, game. I didn't.
I'll have to do that when I watch the game. But 43.8 gross, 42.4 net, long of 57.
And he had that one nice rugby or Aussie-style kick that was down inside the 15, I think it was.
Yeah, and what did they have, 7 yards? Seattle had 7 yards returns. Of course, the Packers had 0 yards return. Trevor Davis was not ready for prime time. I mean, John Ryan had a great day.
He really did, yeah.
But what was Trevor Davis fielding a punt inside the 5 for?
I don't know. He fielded 2 inside the 15, and 1 was inside the 5. I don't know. I don't know if he just wants to show them that he can catch the ball or
yeah,
what, but it was definitely not a wise decision. And, you know, the field position battle was huge. I turned to you at one point, and I said, you know, they're rotating all these guys in on offense that they're costing themselves the ability to go no huddle.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, yeah, but this is a field position game. They need to make sure that they're, you know, getting things where they want to with Vogel and with, you know, any other plays that they were making down the field, because for the whole first half, it was essentially a battle of attrition with both teams having terrible field position.
Yes. Yeah, it really was. And I think Vogel, he kicked them out of really potential bad situation when they – I think he was – they were down inside their 20 for sure. And he had at least a 45-yard punt, and then there was a 10-yard penalty tacked onto it. So all of a sudden Seattle was back on like its 33 or something like that. So
yeah.
That was huge. That was really big. Ryan had a bad punt. I can't remember if that led to points or not. But I don't think any of Vogel's punts led to points. I mean, just the fact that they weren't very good.
I think they got a field goal out of a Ryan punt toward the end of the game in the fourth quarter, maybe.
Yeah.
But, boy, I mean, I'm looking at Ryan's net, 45.8.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Amazing. Yeah. I know what I wanted to talk about. McCarthy's timeout.
Two timeouts.
Second quarter. I've at times been in favor of that because you have Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
But not in that tight of a game, not against when you've shut down Seattle the whole time. And your odds of doubling up against Seattle just aren't that good. I'm sorry. If you have the ball, even if you're getting the ball at your own 40, you didn't prove you can move it.
Right.
Why are you so eager to give them another chance?
Yes.
I thought that was really dumb.
So to run through the scenario, it was the Packers took over, I think it was at like the – with like 55 seconds left or something. I'm trying to flip through the pages here and find it. Okay, here we go. So the Packers took over with – or excuse me, Seattle took over with 55 seconds left, mm-hmm. like I thought. And it was very clear that they were content to let this go to halftime.
Because they weren't calling any timeouts.
No, they ran the ball once with Procise for minus one. McCarthy mm-hmm. calls a timeout. They run it again with Procise for 8 yards. McCarthy calls
a
second
timeout.
That's
when I wouldn't – I could have seen the first one.
Right.
But when he ran for eight
– yep.
That's when I would have just said, screw it. I'm not going to do it.
So then after McCarthy calls a second timeout, Procise picks up the first down, and then Pete Carroll takes a timeout
mm-hmm.
because McCarthy just saved him about a minute off
That's
the clock.
Right.
And then, of course, there's a big throw to Baldwin, a big rush by Russell Wilson, and they take two shots into the end zone. And sure enough, they end it with a field goal. Now, this could have been 10-0 because we didn't talk about that silly block in the back penalty on the interception return.
That
Jones took all the way to the house.
Right.
That was totally unnecessary. So this could have been 10-0 at half. Instead, it's 3. The only reason I thought McCarthy might have done this is because...
Well, wait a second. It could have been 14.
Yes, it could have been 14.
Wilson wasn't that far from completing a pass in the end zone.
That's true. I forgot about that. So the only reason I thought McCarthy might have done this is because... the defense was playing so well and Seattle was going absolutely nowhere that he thought, okay, I'm going to get my stop on third down. But I agree. I don't get it. It's cost them in the past.
Did
it cost them today.
Did anyone ask him about it after the game?
I'm not sure. I didn't see the transcript.
We've got to ask him about it tomorrow because he's going to bristle, but so what? It's just – you know what I'd like to do? I hope I have the time tomorrow. I'd like to go back. Maybe I'll do that this week. Go back and look at all of – the times he's done that and see how successful that's been.
I remember I wrote last year about how teams had scored, like every single team they played up until week 10 scored in the final 5 minutes of the second quarter. It was something ridiculous like that last year.
Yeah, I remember you doing that.
And a bunch of them were within the last 2 minutes. Some of them aided by timeouts, some of them not. But the bottom line is that the Packers have had some issues closing halves, and this wasn't a great way to start it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how it plays out next week against Atlanta, because that's an offense that's even more lethal than
Packer
anything
fans
Seattle did.
Are going to hope the Packers lose the toss and the other team defers because then McCarthy can't double up and won't be as tempted to call timeouts.
Exactly. Anything else?
You know, the only other thing was I spilled my damn soda right before the game.
That is
true.
Holy
crap. Thanks to you for going and running and getting some paper towels, because that was like a flood.
It was a full cup of Diet Coke.
I know. I'm usually not like that, but I must be getting old because all my memories are of old columnists like dumping coffee on their laptops and frying their laptops. And I always vowed that wouldn't be me.
Well, you missed the laptop, so you're good in that regard.
I was lucky in that regard, yeah. So, I blame it on the preseason. I was rusty. I didn't play enough in the preseason. And, you know, next year I'm gonna play every game in the preseason. So.
Well, you heard it here. Tom will play every game in the preseason, and Aaron Rodgers will not.
Even if I have to pay my own way, I'm going to all the preseason games next year.
All right. Well, we took you through all of Seattle. We'll have one more podcast for you in the middle of the week, and then a preview of Atlanta later on. Thank you very much for listening, and don't forget to check out all of our coverage on jsonline.com and packersnews.com. So we hope you enjoyed the podcast. We hope you enjoyed week one, and we will talk to you guys soon.